Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hi everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched The Booth at the End.
The Booth at the End.
Starring America's foster father, Xander Berkeley.
Yeah. America's stepdad, Xander Berkeley.
ZB, the Z-Bear.
I heard you can do things.
I give people the opportunity to do things.
But you can make things happen, like magic.
There's something you need?
I want to be prettier.
What we do is we make an agreement.
What do I have to do?
I offer you a task. You do the task, you get what you want.
Tasks.
old Z-Bear.
This is, it's a Thursday, Tom, mm-hmm. I believe. I've been told it's Thursday.
I mean, who can say at this point?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what month it is.
Yeah, no. Jesus. Couldn't even.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Don't ask me that question. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But that means it's a We Just Watched Classic with one of our Patreon subscribers, in this case, Lef.
Yeah, Lef.
Lef. Lef told us about this series. It's free on Amazon Prime. I believe it's also on Hulu. It was made in like 2010 or 11.
Yeah, it's 2011.
Yeah, it's two seasons. We were tasked with watching the first, which is five episodes at 22 minutes each.
Yeah, five 22-minute episodes. So normally we would be like, no.
Oh yeah, when someone's like, will you watch a series, it's like no, of course not.
No.
But when we realized it just equals to like less than 2 hours, it was like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, like 110 minutes.
It's got the X-Bear, so
yeah,
you know.
it's got Z-Bear.
Mm-hmm. I follow him on Twitter. Do you follow him?
I do.
Good. It's nice to check in with Xander Berkeley.
Yeah, it's nice to know that he's still out there doing stuff.
Mm-hmm. And he's, well, okay.
After getting a sword through the head in Terminator 2 and getting killed by Virginia Madsen as Candy Woman.
Right. God, what a professional dick.
And betraying the President of the United States in Air Force One.
Mm-hmm. And playing God? Probably not God. In this,
it's unclear.
Yes,
what
he's
he
not
is
God.
In
he's
this.
Not God. This
no,
is
no. He's definitely not God. But
well, okay. Before we describe the plot, how did you like this, Tom?
Well, I'm going to start off by saying I actually really enjoyed this.
Same.
And I urge you guys to stop the podcast right now and go watch the series, because I'm going to watch the second season like as soon as I can.
Same.
So it's definitely worth watching. It's very, very good.
I am very thankful to Lef.
Yeah.
For telling me about this show that otherwise I would have never found.
No, I never would have heard of this. It was apparently on FX, and this just never hit my radar at all. And I was paying attention to television in 2011, so
right?
I don't know.
I don't think it'll get a third season.
I'm sure not.
But yeah, I definitely want to watch season two and will soon after this podcast. This is what's impressive, is it becomes very clear that the entire show is going to take place in a booth at a restaurant.
Yep, in the same booth at the same diner.
And for something that does that, it's very impressive.
Yeah, it's incredibly good. It's very well written, and they managed to shoot it. They managed to keep changing it up so that there's like different shots and different feelings, and they don't, it's not just the same static
right.
shot of two people sitting in a booth. They actually figure out how to make each scene different, and like there's a language for each person that he sits with. And it's very, I mean, it's just very impressive.
Yeah, and even without that detail, the dialogue is riveting enough.
Like, oh, yeah.
I never stopped paying attention. I got very nervous when this show started because I think because of the name and immediately seeing like the quality of the pilot in terms of it didn't look as well shot, or it didn't look like the whatever it was shot on mm-hmm. was as nice as what it's later shot on in the episodes.
Yeah, and the sound's a little bad.
Yeah.
In the first episode.
The moment that happened, I was like, okay, we're not leaving this diner. And then the title came up, and it's the same font. It's the typewriter font from Clerks. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's like, are you going to try to be Clerks? Is that what I'm about to watch? Is like a series that's going to be like a bad imitation of Clerks? It's not that at all. It's more of a drama.
It comes off like a stage play.
Yeah.
It could very easily be a stage play.
And Xander Berkeley, by the way, is killing it.
He's very good in this.
He's very good
in
this. I mean,
he's always been awesome.
Yes, but the specific character he's playing, it's this assertiveness, but passiveness, because you get the feeling that he doesn't really know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not in charge.
He's not omniscient.
Yes. The premise is that there's this man, Xander Berkeley, and he is sitting at this diner booth, and he is approached by various people, and everybody sort of heard that he solves problems.
Yeah, he can give you things.
Yeah. But he can't, insists.
Right, he keeps telling people that it's not me, it's you. But basically what he does is it reminded me a lot of like Needful Things, although as the series progresses, it becomes ambiguous whether he's good or evil or neither.
I think it's a neither situation where because I don't think he knows the outcome or how the outcomes. He seems surprised when things happen.
Right. Well, he knows that, like, basically you come to him, you tell him what he wants. He looks in his ledger that he's not a ledger. It's a journal that he's endlessly writing in. And he tells you what you have to do to get that thing. And that's all he knows.
And like, the two things do not appear related at all.
They don't. No, it's like the first scene we see is a girl comes to him and is like, I want to be prettier. And they have this. Oh wait, no. The first person that comes to him is James, right?
Yes, but what you were about to say is the best example because she says, "I want to be prettier," and he says, "You need to rob a bank."
You need to rob $1,078 from a bank.
Yeah.
The first scene with James is ambiguous, and then we sort of learn that he's picked out a little girl for something, and then we later find out that he's supposed to kill that little girl in order to save his son, who is in the hospital with cancer.
Yeah. And later there is a second man that he the second man wants a woman from a centerfold.
Yep.
And so he says, you have to protect this little girl.
Yeah.
And it's the same girl. And that's what starts happening. Yeah.
Right. That's the Needful Things vibe, is that the people's tasks all become, most of them become intertwined.
Yes.
But as they play out... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I think you were about to say what I was going to say.
Well, I was going to say, as they play out, like they start to change. Not everybody follows through with their deals. And it's like it becomes clear. Like I appreciate that in the very first episode, one of the people that comes to him is a nun.
Yeah.
Who wants to hear God's voice again. Like she says she doesn't hear God's voice anymore. And she straight up asks him. It's like minute 12 of this series. Are you the devil?
Right.
Because that's
everybody's
gonna be,
thinking it.
Right. That's going to be the first thing you think. And then he says, I forget how he answers it.
Well, the first thing I'd ask, I'd be like, are you Xander Berkeley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget what he said. Do you remember what he says?
It's
he doesn't say yes or no.
No, he says something.
Like something like, do you believe I am? Or like, would it matter if I was, or would you know if I was, or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
It's
ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
but he seems to know the answer.
Yes, he knows.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of telling moments where, like, it sort of hints at what he might be. Like, somebody asks him, well, you're the middleman, so who's your boss? And he kind of smiles at that.
Yeah, that's how the episode, that episode ends, which I really liked.
And then the kid later asks him, do you know what it's like to have a dad that beats the hell out of you every time just because the bottle says drink me? And he pauses for a second and he says, no, I don't.
Yeah. He also says, I have trouble sleeping.
Yeah, I have trouble sleeping, yeah.
Which implies that he sleeps. I think, like, the point is to not know what he is.
Right, but that's the point I was getting to, is that, like, because of the needful things aspect, where it's, like, intertwined, and it's, like, he's tasking some of these people with terrible things. Yes. So you're like, okay, he's evil. But as the series goes on, it's like, is he?
No, because ultimately things work out. To an extent, like, there are innocent people who get killed.
One innocent person gets killed.
Yeah, there's someone who is... That's what I really like about it, is that there's a person who seems good, and then goes about his task in the worst way.
Right, and he's sort of, like, blown away by it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you did what now?
Yeah, yeah, the best way to think of this character is he's kind of an angel, like he's an angelic presence. I think he's more like a neutral angel.
I ended the series feeling like he was an angel.
Yeah, but a different kind of angel where, like,
he puts the choices in front of people, and he doesn't force anybody to do anything. He never gives an opinion on what they should do either. And anytime somebody asks, he's just like, you don't have to do it.
Right.
He says, there are many choices you can make. I'm just giving you a very specific one that you can make.
That's what I liked, is like the guy talking about his son and being like, mm-hmm. well, will he die if I don't do this? And he's like, no, maybe he'll get better. Like, I'm not controlling it. I'm not blackmailing you. It's just that if you want him to get better, definitely, you do this. There's a woman who has to bomb a restaurant to cure her husband's Alzheimer's. And he says something like, yeah, maybe he'll be cured. And she's like, it's not a curable disease. And he's like, well, people have fallen from planes and survived. Nothing's impossible. Like, he's almost urging them not to do it sometimes. Like, he's telling them straight out, like, this isn't the only answer.
Yeah, he never pushes anybody to do anything. And
no.
When a lot of people, I love how different each character reacts to him and reacts to the choices they've made.
Yeah.
Like, the cop is aggressive, but sort of like is still trying to bargain with him. He's like, come on, give me something. Like, I've done this. You got to give me something. And all of his scenes are like dark and like shot at more combative angles.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then you have the guy, Willem, who he tasked with defending the little girl, who eventually kidnaps the girl to keep her safe. He's projecting onto X-Bear, Xander Bear.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I can be the hero and not make deals with guys like you. But like, Xander is never making him do any of the crazy things he decides to do. Like,
yeah.
He decides to do them so he can have some woman he saw in a magazine.
Right. Like, that's what I really enjoyed that character, because he has one of the dumbest things he wants. He keeps saying, I want this woman.
And then it becomes clear that he doesn't want her. Like, he's barely even thinking about her. Like,
yeah.
It's clear, like, Xander keeps trying to...
Well, he starts obsessing. I like the idea that he's like, you have to protect this girl, and he has... I think this is a lot of how he functions, because the idea, it's like serendipity and, like... It's kind of like Fantasy Island. Yeah, exactly. He points them in a direction and says, go in that direction. And the secret is they don't actually have to go do that thing. And then it magical, poof, you get the thing you want. It's not magic. It's not that he is magical. It's that he knows the butterfly effect of what that direction will take someone in. as opposed to being in control. Like, that's what I thought the ledger meant and everything, is that he's just being told, like, okay, if you point this person in this direction, everything will fall into place in a way that gets them what they want.
Right, and that's why he checks his book to see what tasks to give people, because what he writes down constantly, like, all he's concerned with is the details of what they're doing and what they're thinking when they're doing these things.
Right.
And I think that helps him. That's like what determined, like that, like you said, that maps out the butterfly effect for him. And I think what he's doing is he's putting people on a path to get something that they actually want, but aren't sure of, like, yes, or subconsciously want.
That's the idea, is to
get, and they either make the choice or they don't.
The everybody says they were recommended him by someone else, and they always say that person was very happy or very satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you're thinking, like, well, we're not going to run into people who are dissatisfied if they all died or if something horrible happened.
Right.
So you're only seeing the happy versions. But what it really is that everybody, or almost everybody, comes out of it feeling okay. Like, the woman who wants to be pretty ends up finding a man who's really into her, who's a bit of a little scumbag.
Wait, he's a bank robber.
He's a bank robber. I mean, well, so is she.
Not all the outcomes are ideal.
Well, that's what it is. Is that's what I like about it, is that when you think a guardian angel or an angel in a movie, it's always like, and everything worked out. And in this, it's like, no, everything is a, like, kind of evened out.
It's a spectrum.
And most of the people came out happy. Some people came out really happy. Some people came out dead.
Willem dies and Melody dies.
Yeah. So they do get what they, or Melody gets what she wants.
Melody gets what she was after, which was to get her father, her family out of financial dire straits. But
I don't think it's his fault. I don't think he knew she would die. I think the idea is that he can point them in that direction, but ultimately it's, humans are random. So it's up to those people. Those people still have, there's still fate. Or there's still no fate,
it's not what we make. Right, it's not, exactly. Xander, it's not, Berkeley. No, exact, Xander Berkeley. Rip. What the fuck is his name in T2?
Oh, Todd.
Todd. She's not my mother, Todd. John, get in butt inside and do what your mother tells you. Because it's all about the choices that each person makes. And because except for the old woman who has to put the bomb in the coffee shop, everybody else's task is intertwined with each other's.
Yeah, well, she's the other side of the spectrum. Although I will say there were characters who mentioned, like, we went out for coffee or I was in a coffee shop. And I assume that's the coffee shop.
Probably,
she was going to bomb.
Yep.
But she's almost the other side of the spectrum, which is that she doesn't do it. And it still works out for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the point of her story is to show that spectrum, is that, like, sometimes you get exactly what you want. Sometimes you get what you want, but it's not exactly on the conditions that you hoped. Sometimes you get something you didn't expect, or sometimes you don't do the thing and you still get what you want, because life is random. And as he says to her, because he's saying it to her, she's the one that he's like, people have fallen out of planes. And so it's, you have to ask, like, did he know? Is that why he's saying that to her?
I don't think that, because he keeps stating that he doesn't know when people ask him specific things, like, he doesn't know.
And I truly believe he doesn't know. So I think I think the point is just to show exactly that, is sometimes it just works out and you don't need to go to him.
Well, there's a point where he says, James, the guy who's supposed to kill the little girl and winds up saving her instead, and his son gets better. Like, James says, you're a monster. And he says, I'd say I feed monsters.
Yeah.
So he puts those kinds of choices in front of people to provoke, like, he's to provoke them into different directions. And it's kind of like, they're sort of like morality tests, I guess, or it's like,
because
like, essentially the task he's given the old lady is, would you kill a bunch of strangers to bring your husband back from Alzheimer's.
Right. And ultimately she realizes she won't.
Right. Yeah. She realizes she's not that. And what does she say? She says, I'm not selfish enough.
Yeah. And I don't think she was therefore rewarded with her husband coming back. I think those were two random incidences.
Mm-hmm.
She decided not to, but her husband, it turns out her husband doesn't have Alzheimer's. He had something else, and the medication was making him seem like he had Alzheimer's, is what they learn.
Yeah.
And you could say, like, oh, that's some magic thing that happened. But most likely that was going to happen no matter if she had gone to Xander Berkeley or not.
Yeah.
I think that's supposed to be part. I think that there's different variables here, which is that life is random and human nature is random, and there is no extreme good or evil. It's more like neutrality and chaos that he's clearly has some idea of.
Yeah.
It's almost marrying the idea of religion and an all-seeing God with nature and chaos.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, there's no like God controlling these people, but there are entities that can see the patterns better than we can.
Right. And there's cause and effect for certain things.
Yeah. And it's all in his little fucking notebook.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the waitress.
Yeah, the waitress is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't want anything from him. I didn't take many notes. I started to, and then I got too into the series.
Right, I was just watching it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my first notes was like, wow, that waitress has heard some shit. And then she shows up in an episode and like sits down, starts talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks he's like a therapist.
Yeah. She's very interested in what he's doing there every day.
Yeah. And then she tries to develop, I would argue, a romantic relationship.
It's unclear. Mm-hmm. She's definitely lonely.
Yeah.
But it's unclear if she's romantically attracted to Xander Bear, or if it's just, because she's like half his age too, or if it's just like she finds him interesting and like at first thinks he's a therapist and she's clearly, you know, sad. So maybe she wants to find somebody to talk to.
Right.
It may just be that she is looking for companionship, just in not companionship, like camaraderie, you know.
I also think she thinks of herself similar to him. If this is a literal diner, I mean, there could be other levels to this show, but
maybe.
First of all, her shifts are fucking madness because she's working the night shift, she's working the morning shifts. She's just always there.
I do close opens all the time when I work.
Yeah,
at
that's true.
Fucking.
Yeah, I was thinking
food
of
service
when I was working at a diner. Is that I feel like a diner in this case, it could have represented a cheap place to film something, but it also seemed to represent the idea of it's a place where people are often passing through and often in the middle of shit.
Yeah,
and so it's a good place to meet. It's mm-hmm. a good place for this series because it's sort of like, I don't know. Obviously, there are people who just go and hang out at diners, too. But diners are like in a movie when people go to a diner, it's to rest between like action sequences. You know what I mean? Where it's
yeah.
Like,
and discuss some exposition.
Yeah, because they're always open. They're always there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the basic necessities of pie and coffee. I assume that's sort of the significance of her and the diner is that she feels like a therapist and
yeah,
she relates
and she's,
to him.
She's, yeah. And she's sort of stuck in this midway point between like actually experiencing things or actually living something. Like she says, she's very lonely. Like she tells him that.
Yeah. And I imagine so is he.
Probably. They definitely make him look, in that scene anyway, when they're talking to each other, he looks very tired.
Well, they start shooting them through their reflections too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. And he does seem like not a sad character.
No.
But definitely like powerful and lonely.
Yes. He seems very wise, but also kind of burdened by his wisdom somewhat.
Yeah. But also not that... He says it a few times where he's like, I'm not as powerful as people assume I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, like, it's like, all right, what... Like, yeah, the guy's arc where he's trying to protect a little girl, he does it. It's funny because it never occurs to him to go to the police.
No, and when he's he says that he kidnapped her, Zerbear says, you could have just gone to the police. He's like, well, no, because then it wouldn't have counted.
Right.
But, like, he never
asked.
Why wouldn't it have counted? Like, we find out later, like, when Melody is trying to get the recluse out of his house, and she comes to suspect he's a serial killer. She's like, if I call the police and the police drag him out, does that count? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
That counts. You got him out. You got the ball rolling.
Yeah. It's very funny with that. What people, some people ask, some people don't.
Yeah. Man, Willem is such a, he makes so many assumptions about the situation at hand, and he projects so much onto Xander Berkeley. It's like, he was one of the more interesting characters to watch, because it's just like, you're watching this guy hang himself, basically.
Well, yeah, because he starts as a weasel, but then it's a weasel given what seems like a noble task. And it's like, oh,
and
he'll rise to the occasion.
He accomplishes it like a weasel.
Exactly. Yeah, what happens is he sneaks his way into the girl's life that he has to protect. He becomes a gardener nearby. He gets a job at the school. And right away, Xander is sort of surprised by that approach a little bit. So he just assumes identities. And then he saves the girl from a murder attempt of the other guy.
From James, yeah.
And then realizes, oh, this guy has been tasked with killing her. And so he just kidnaps the little girl. And then he is like, I have to kill James. I have to kill the guy that you sent to kill her. That's the only way to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to his house, breaks in, and James ends up murdering him instead. So he's one of the two people who dies.
Yeah, Melody is the other one.
Yeah.
She drugs the... they have a very sad parting scene.
Yeah, like, interesting one.
Yeah, I really... It's hard to... Like, I really felt for that character.
Yeah, she's a tragic character because she just wants to help her father's store.
Yeah, she wants to help her family out. And then it seems like she's doing a good thing at first, because Xander's like, you got to get a recluse outside. She's like, well, I volunteered for Meals on Wheels. I found this guy. He hasn't been out of his apartment in 10 years. He's really sweet.
She's never not doing her best. Final plan is a little nefarious, but she goes to the police first and the police fail her.
Right. Specifically the cop that's been talking to.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, what's his name? Alan.
Yeah, and the cop ultimately just turns himself in.
Right, I appreciated his story.
Yeah.
Because it really laid it out the most clearly that it was like, because I was kind of thinking about it in the back of my mind when the first task he gives Alan is trying to find this bank robber who we later learn is his son. But he wasn't, he kind of monkey's pawed it. He wasn't specific enough. He just said he wanted to find the money. He didn't say he wanted to find the bank robber. So Xander tells him he has to kill somebody. So he kills this like known scumbag.
He tries to fake him out first. And right. I love this answer where
a couple of people try to fake him out.
And he gives a similar answer every time. He's like, well, I did it. And he's like, no, you didn't. And he's like, well, how do you know I didn't? And he's like, because you would have the money.
You would have the thing you wanted if you did it.
Yeah, he shows... Like, there's a few times where people will be like, I did the thing. Where's my reward? And it's like, I'm not a fucking genie. Like, yeah. It's just the things that you would do would result in that
right.
thing.
It'll happen if you did it.
Yeah.
So he makes a second deal to... He says, I want to catch my son before anybody else catches him. And before he kills somebody or somebody kills him. And he's like, okay, so you have to find a dirty cop and protect the dirty cop. So he does find one in his precinct and is wondering about how to protect him. And in the back of my mind, I was like, well, you're dirty.
Yeah.
And then like he comes to that realization in the last episode where he's like, I realized I'm the dirty cop. I've been protecting myself for years. I've got to turn myself in. I'm the reason my son is the way he is. The best thing I can do for him right now is to turn myself in and pay for all the shit I've done and essentially be out of his life. And then he's like, he thanks Xander Berkeley and shakes his hand. He's like, thank you for showing me the right choice.
Right.
And that's like the clearest that the series makes. I think the clearest it makes what Xander Berkeley is actually doing.
Well, it's the most like cut and dry. It's the most, I would almost call it the most cliche version.
I don't know if it's necessarily like, cliche, but it is the clearest.
Yeah. It's the like, I wanted this thing, but I really got this, and that's actually what I needed, you know?
Well, yeah, it's more like, yeah, but it's more like somebody realizing, oh, I'm the fucking villain all along. Like, it was me the whole time. Like,
and I would say the woman who wants to be pretty and meets a man, that's a little bit of that. I mean, but then that's what I like is that, again, it's the spectrum. It's every little, because there's also, I would say the most positive version is the nun.
I really liked her story.
Yeah. And you kind of know where it's going to go because he meets another man who's like, they want the same thing.
He's an artist and he wants to feel inspiration again. Did you recognize him?
No.
He's I forget her name. He's in the first season of Deadwood.
Oh shit.
He's the husband of the lady that Timothy Oliphant ends up hooking up with. Throws off a cliff. Yep.
That's great.
He's the king in Gallivant as well, if anybody's seen Gallivant.
Yeah, because he wants to feel inspiration, and he says to him, like, you have to be a father. And then a nun comes and says, I want to hear God again. And he's like, well, you have to get pregnant.
We see her first. We don't see him
The moment he says that to each of them, I was like, oh, okay.
Right, but we don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right. And in this version, they both get what they want in each other and in forming a family together, essentially.
Right. And
she's killing it. That nun is great in this.
I loved her, man. I loved all of her scenes.
Really good.
Yeah, she was great. And then it was, like you said, yeah, it's the happiest ending because she gets pregnant and she's like, yeah, I hear God.
Yeah.
Like, I hear God in the child that I'm going to have.
Yeah.
And I mean, she has to leave the convent, but it's like,
but she doesn't care.
But this is what was going to make you happy.
Yeah.
And this having a family isn't against God, surely. So
yeah. It's
against the vows she took, but yeah. And I loved those scenes where she's like, but I have to break my vows. And he's like, well then don't, or do. It's entirely up to you. You may end up hearing God. And then at one point when she's like, he kind of pushes her a little bit in that direction when she starts talking about all the quasi dates they've been having. Like, she keeps sneaking out of the convent to go.
Oh yeah. And he's like, you're dating? You just have to have, technically, you just have to have the kid.
Right. And she's like, well, I can't have it with just anybody. It has to be somebody important. So already she sort of like gets it, I guess.
Yeah. And I assume he, because he also, the decisions are based off who is being given them too.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's like a combination. It's like, okay, this person to get this result needs this task. And if they do that thing, if they head in that direction, based on who they are, they will get that thing. So it's the idea of like, yeah, you just need to have a child. You can abandon the child if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go out there with that in mind, I need to have a kid, you're going to get this outcome. And of course, her being her isn't just going to get knocked up, spit out a kid, and then,
back to the convent. Yeah.
Yeah. So she naturally looks for a relationship instead.
Yeah, and the scene I was talking about is the one after that where he's like, you're dating. It's when she comes back in and tells him about the dates where she's been sneaking out to go to his studio so he can sketch and paint her.
Right.
And she's like clearly so excited about it. And he says, are you hearing God again? And she's sort of thrown off by it. It's like, well, what do you mean? I haven't done the thing yet. And he's like, I know, but you seem so happy.
Right. He doesn't know.
So
as he keeps putting it, there are other ways to get the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it reminds it, I don't, this isn't a perfect analogy. It's like when you're lost in the woods, you're supposed to focus on a specific thing, walk straight towards it, hit it, focus on another specific thing, walk straight towards it, hit it, because people tend to walk in circles otherwise.
Yeah.
So the idea is you find a tree that's unique and you say, I'm going to walk to that tree. And that's what it feels like he's doing, is that he's saying, go exactly in that direction. You don't actually have to reach that thing. And so, like, he is surprised that the results might happen before, which is really funny. But it's like there's so many variables along the way that he really doesn't seem to know.
Yeah.
And his interactions with her were terrific with that.
Yeah, those were great.
Because she kind of rolls with it. Like, she's not necessarily happy with what he's telling her, but mm-hmm. she gets into the spirit of it the most, I feel like, on her own. Like, she says she's not going to do it at one point because dating is too hard, and then it just sort of happens.
Yeah.
You could even argue that it's not necessarily what he anticipated, because she stopped. And then she just happened. She ran into the guy because she saw him while she was doing the dating.
She went to an art gallery to try to get picked up.
Yeah, right.
And he was an artist and he was there. I think he doesn't know the specifics. I think he just knows that if you do the thing he tells you to do, you will get what you want.
If you go in that general direction.
Right. Something else may happen along the way.
I think, like, the note-taking, it's almost like an experiment. Because he always wants specific details. So it's like he knows, it's almost like he doesn't know why it works either. And he's trying to figure it out.
That's what made me think he was along the lines of being an angel at the end of it. Although he could very well be either, but mm-hmm. like it's, and the comment where he says, I feed monsters. Like if he was he still might say that if he was a demon. But
I don't think he's a demon. I don't think he's specifically either. I think he's just an entity the way we imagine those entities.
Right, but I think the note-taking is he's presenting the choice, and his task is to document what people do with these choices.
Because it does feel very... it feels very much like the idea of the pact between God and the devil, where there's free will, and they can't make them do anything. So it's almost like you said, it's morality tales where he's taking them and he's saying, you have to accomplish this thing. And then trying to see how they do that.
Yeah.
And what that means. And there's a spectrum of that. Like when the bank robber is like, look, I got a gun. He asks her, are you going to load it for the robbery? Or are you going to not load it? And like, that's a very important question that she doesn't seem to even realize how important it is, because it's also a matter of jail time.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's like, I think I'll load it. It wouldn't be real otherwise. And so, like, she's still not, like, the worst person. I certainly wouldn't want to hang out with her.
No. One of the first things she says is, like, well, like, there's, like, movies about bank robberies. I could look into that. So she clearly already doesn't really think of it like a real thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, sure, that's a fine place to start.
Right. And he's very passive about what people's decisions are.
Yeah.
Which is funny because he's kind of passive aggressive. I'd get kind of mad at him because when he's like, oh, no, it's up to you. And then you show up and you're like, well, I did this. And he'd be like, really? And it's like, why? Fucking why? Give me advice or stop acting so just surprised, fucking devil angel. But whatever.
Well, he doesn't he doesn't know what people are going to do. Like,
I know.
Like, he's genuinely, like, taken aback when Willem tells him he kidnapped a little girl.
I would be very frustrated with this man if I was trying to deal with this Satan angel.
And he's clearly surprised when Alan tells him about Melody.
Yeah.
When he's like, do you know what happened to that girl? He's like, no, I don't.
That's the other thing, is that he seems surprised when things intersect. He knows they will. He doesn't know specifically how.
Yeah.
He just knows it tends to happen. And I think the reason that would be is because he is directly changing the course of time and history. Like, a person who's on a specific path mm-hmm. is deviating. They go to him and he tells them to deviate in a very random way.
Yeah.
And so when he tells that many people in the same location to do that, they're bound to cancel each other out. Like, he specifically gives two people opposing missions, knowing that only one of them can succeed. One of them has to save, kill a girl. One has to protect a girl. I thought maybe
one of them only has to protect her for 10 weeks.
Right, and I think maybe the original thought was in 10 weeks the other guy gets to kill the little girl.
That could be a way it worked out. Sure,
but that ends up being the most chaotic result.
It does, but they both could still. They're opposing, but they both could have still accomplished their missions.
Right. But it is two things that that never would have happened otherwise. That he
none of these things would have happened. Well, except the kid was still going to rob banks, but Jenny wouldn't have.
Yeah,
that old lady certainly never would have put a bomb in a coffee shop.
Hey, you never know.
That's true.
You don't trust old ladies.
The nun they can get might have left the convent if she stopped hearing God.
Yeah. I think there's a less religious version of this and more of like a temporal sci-fi interpretation where it's like he's a Time Lord or he sees the multiverse and he is able. I know the book implies a more fantasy version.
I think this is explicitly fantasy. I don't see how you can totally reconcile a sci-fi version. Yeah, I don't.
It's someone who is aware of the multiverse and sees all the possibilities, and these people are drawn to him, and he can look at their timelines and say, okay, if you go on that specific path, this butterfly effect will happen, this Rube Goldberg of events. Like, I do think there's a sci-fi version of this.
Yeah. We didn't see anything, any sci-fi elements, though, is my only...
No, we didn't see any religious elements, except they talk, there's nuns, and they talk of the devil and stuff, so that's clearly more the direction they're going. But the point is that it's ambiguous.
Right.
So the point is that he could be anything from some sort of Neo in the Matrix...
Right, he could be an alien.
...to the resurrection of Jesus. To an alien, yeah. And I, you know, the whole point is we're not
I don't think he's Jesus. Like, that's not in there.
You don't think Xander Berkeley could be Jesus? He didn't have that range?
No, he has that range. I'm just saying, as this character in the show, like, he's I don't think he's Jesus.
Right. Well, Jesus would have said yes to the Father question, right? Because Jesus got really screwed over there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe God got too wasted on the Super Bowl and smacked him around a little bit. I don't know.
Oh, I was thinking just the being crucified. I don't know. Can't God come down and, like, I've never read the Bible, Tom. Can he, like, does he have powers? Can he shoot? Can he shoot things out of his fingers and, like, save? Does he have, like, laser vision? I'm just saying, like...
Man, I hope so.
In the biblical Jesus, he'd get
otherwise,
crucified.
Otherwise, what's the point of all this?
Right. He'd get crucified, he'd go to heaven, see God, and be like, and you didn't want to step in? That hurt like hell, you know? That's my impression of Jesus.
I was up there for like 3 days.
Yeah. Dude, what the fuck? And he's like, no, it's all, I got it all in my little book. I'm Xander Berkeley, playing God. That's what I want.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to circle back to the fact that everything we're talking about is people talking in a diner.
Yeah, it's the only scene, the only setting is the interior of this diner.
This has, it has that Primer energy. Tom, you haven't seen Primer.
I still haven't, no.
You haven't seen, you know what it has, more energy is Incoherence, or Coherence. Did you watch Coherence yet?
Nope.
Coherence is a movie I've ranted about several times. It's just people in a house, and they're just talking, and it's one of the most, like, heady sci-fis I've seen in a while because of what the premise is. Primer's the same way, where it's very low budget, it's mostly just talking, but you're like, oh god, my head, what the fuck. And so I fucking love the low budget, limited sets, and manages to feel huge. And this manages to feel huge because they got these actors who are really good at selling it, who come in and they give basically monologues. They tell stories about what's happening in conversations. And you're like riveted by what's going to happen next because they keep leaving the diner and then coming back. Or Pontypool is another example. The zombie movie that's all over a radio.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you can sort of picture the scenes as they describe it. You're not sure what any of them will do because of how the characters act and how the outcomes go. So it's like really fun. I'm excited for season two, knowing how random it can get.
Yeah, a lot of the stories did not play out in the way I expected.
No, not at all. And now knowing that, season two, it's like, fuck, I'm not going to know. Yeah, because there's perfectly innocent stories that end in heartbreak. Good people die, bad people die. There's justice. Sometimes there's not justice. Sometimes nothing, it doesn't even matter. Sometimes the thing he tells them to do doesn't happen. Sometimes it sort of happens. And I think the we didn't even need to talk about how it ended.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, spoilers, everyone.
Yeah, so Melody's dad comes in at the very end and sits down and explains what happened, that she dragged this serial murderer out of the house, and he basically... like,
scratched her to death?
Clawed and bit her to death.
Yeah. She, like, bled out.
Yeah, and so he asks, can he bring Melody back? And he says, yeah, that can happen. And then the series ends. Yep.
That's,
and the show ends.
That's where it... I was peeking at season two, and apparently it's a new diner. Mostly new characters. Well, Xander is obviously there. And they said some familiar faces, so I assume that dad is back. I assume we're going to continue this, because that's when... I mean, it's the perfect ending, because... everything until this point is what we were saying, which is he isn't magical. He can just see outcomes. But that's a person coming back from the dead.
That's necromancy.
Right. So the implication is that there's two versions. The implication is that he can, through magic, bring a person back, or he could tell that dead to do something. Because I think there's also escalation. Is that he proves it to the scumbag bank robber kid, by saying the kid's like, I want flowers for, what's her name?
Jenny.
He's like, I want flowers for Jenny. He goes, okay, help 10 ladies cross the street. And so it's like, okay, you want something that's manageable. Do this manageable thing and you'll see it shows up. So I assume that's why, like,
right.
You want
He's going
to
have to like sabotage a space shuttle.
Yeah. Because it's like, yeah, you want your kid to live, you have to kill another kid. It escalates. And so, yeah, like, bring someone back from the dead. There's the magical version where it's like, poof, she's back. Or he has to do something that sets off a series of events where scientists come up with a breakthrough where they can bring people back from the dead, right?
Yeah.
Like, if it's confined to the realms of reality, which everything else seemed to be, that's what it would have to be.
Yeah,
so
but
the
that's
question
all, I mean,
is it confined to that?
Right. Well, that's also how Game of Thrones season one ended. You know?
What?
It ended with the dragons, where it's like everything else up to that point had like just standard medieval shit, and then all of a sudden there's dragons.
That was... not to talk about Game of Thrones, that's not when I realized that Game of Thrones was magical, and maybe this is on me. It was when, like, the witch did witch stuff. Because dragons could be, like, creatures, you know what I mean? They have a biology.
Yeah, sure.
It's when she, like, made a ghost show up, and I was like, wait.
Oh, yeah, that's when it gets really crazy.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right, is that that's what this ending basically is. Is this going to become magical? Or I like the idea that it never leaves reality, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Either way, it's exciting.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to watch season two.
Yeah, me too. More. Give me more.
More.
Of that sweet Burke.
More.
I love him.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrific in this.
He's very good, yeah.
It's great seeing him not play like a fucking wiener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's good at it.
All right. Any final thoughts?
No, just this is very good.
Very good. If you didn't watch it and you listened to this, I hope you feel bad.
Yeah, because we spoiled it for you. You should have watched it.
Yeah, I hope you feel like you should have watched it. Sorry, don't feel bad, but like regret, you know?
Yeah, I mean, still go watch it. It'll be less good now that you know what happens. But
yeah, find a guy.
Then that means you can watch season two all fresh.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Or you could find like a guy and wish you never listened to this podcast. And then they, I don't know, then we get murdered.
Probably.
Yeah.
like a or train will drive through my house or something.
We get Ashton Kutched in the director's cut of Butterfly Effect.
Mm-hmm. We strangle ourselves with the umbilical cord. Uh-huh.
We sync up. We do it at, well, I guess we were born at different times, so we couldn't do it at the same time.
No, we could do it. We could do it at the same time a year apart, though.
That's true.
Well, yeah, actually, like no, the exact we same.
We could have a strangulation.
No,
we couldn't.
No.
No. It's gonna take.
It's fine.
More than
it's
that.
Fine. It'll take more work, but it'll work itself out.
All right. Jeez, Lef. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Patreon subscriber.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you giving us this show to watch. This is a really good show.
This is a really good show. As we all do, I needed something to watch. So.
Yeah. This was good.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're interested, we have a Patreon. That's where Lef did this through as a Patreon tier. It's patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts there, like Fox Mulder is a Maniac and Tom and Jeff Watch Batman. So check that out if you want to.
Mm-hmm. We also have a store, tpublic.com/store/gamefullyunemployed, where we have t-shirts and stickers and stuff, but you guys, look, don't buy t-shirts right now.
No, here's what you do. I want you to buy a t-shirt, and on that journey, you learn something about yourself and eventually turn yourself in for murder.
Yes.
Or corruption.
Accurate.
Yeah. Or you get a nun pregnant.
Yeah, you know, or both. Both things could happen.
That's true. It's endless possibilities in the Berkeley universe. Mm-hmm. Sander... The Xanderverse.
In the Zerber, in the Zerber universe.
Zerber universe. Oh, God, oh, I love man. Him.
Yep, he's the best.
Yeah, I just want to squeeze his tummy. I want to go, who's a Z-bear? X-bear.
Zerber.
Zerber. What a little Zerber.